This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
So the Rockets lost yesterday. That was disappointing.
Well, look, Sean. Just because the Warriors trapped James Harden at midcourt and made it a 4-on-3 situation, you can't expect four players, including Russell Westbrook, to simply eviscerate three substandard Golden State Warriors.
The worst team in basketball.
It's 4-on-3. What are you going to do? Yeah. And, well, okay, for one, maybe Russ shouldn't take 8 3-pointers. Maybe he shouldn't take 3-4-on-3. And maybe he shouldn't miss from inside the foul line over and over again. It was abysmal. The last half of the fourth quarter of that game was one of my least favorite feelings of this entire season, because it also included Draymond Green,
yes,
flexing for the crowd after he hit his threes.
Yeah, it was a real clarity inducer when it came to how much I hate Draymond Green. I'm like, God, because I've been taking great pleasure in this season exposing the fact that Draymond Green is not a top 15 or 20 player in the world. I never thought he was when they were winning these championships. He's a good player. He's a guy who's a perfect fit when Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, and Steph Curry are your three best players, because he's going to do all the dirty work and he's going to do some things that fill up a stat sheet, and that's all well and good. But we've learned that this year that when Draymond Green is the best player on your basketball team, you are firmly embedded in the back end of the lottery. And I have loved and enjoyed that. And that it was Draymond Green, not just Draymond Green going off, but bombing away from three, which is when the Golden State Warriors were at their apex, when they were at their peak, when they were that just that robot machine that was running over and steamrolling the entire league. The one way that you stop them, there were very few things offensively the Warriors would do where you wouldn't just hold your breath and go, oh God, they're going to destroy us here. Draymond Green shooting a three-pointer was the one Achilles heel, because he'd shoot like six of them a game. It's probably a little bit how teams feel like when Russell Westbrook shoots three-pointers, to your point, Seth.
Yeah. 0-for-8.
Our web guy, our digital guy here, Brandon Scott, who does a great job here doing digital, tweeted during the game yesterday something to the effect of, Russ is 0-for-7 from three. There's probably five or six of those that I would like to see him peel back on. And I retweeted, I said, or seven, or all seven of them. Maybe he shoots one where it's catch and shoot, nobody's on him, he's wide open, you want him to shoot those. Russ has gotten better about that lately. Yesterday was not one of those games. His shot selection was poor
yesterday. Yeah, I feel weird even.
Yesterday.
He's made so much progress.
He
looks so much more like his old self that I feel weird even calling him out for it in this game. Other than that, you lost to the Warriors, one of the worst teams in the NBA, on Christmas Day. And frankly, what will be the Warriors' biggest game they win this year. This will be, for them, they're treating it like that. The Chronicle, all right, John McClain's coming in here at 8 o'clock. Now I'm peeved. Okay. I'm peeved. I don't know if this ran in the...
I wish I knew why so I could calm you down.
I'm going to tell you why, because I'm looking at the Chronicle this morning.
Yeah.
I'm reading Jonathan Fagan's three takeaways about this victory and everything, and then I click on something else, the story, because I'm like, well, this looks odd. This almost looks like somebody who's gloating about the Warriors beating the Rockets on Christmas Day, and I'm trying to scroll up to it here. They printed this story in the Chronicle, or at least they put it online, this Bruce Jenkins character just gloating about how awesome it was that the Warriors made the Rockets look like clowns on Christmas
Day. That was on Chron.com. Who is Bruce Jenkins?
He's like a San Francisco, whatever one of those stories are over there. Like a guest columnist.
Is this one of those?
So this is what I read in the Chronicle this morning.
Okay.
Santa did the dishes. He took everyone's wrapping paper to the recycle bins. God. The Warriors beat Houston and James Harden didn't make a free throw. By the way, he only had one free throw attempt in this game.
Yes, San Francisco Chronicle since 1973.
Two of those things were undeniably true on Christmas Day. And if you missed the basketball thing, you would have bet the house on St. Nick. Just all this stuff. And then he goes on to talk about how talking about the Rockets. They refused to accept being knocked out of the playoffs by Steph Curry, Klay Thompson-led teams in 2015 and 16, choosing every excuse they could find. Then Kevin Durant arrived, and the Warriors eliminated Houston in each of the past two postseasons.
Okay, let me ask you this. He writes for the San Francisco Chronicle.
Yeah.
Are you sure you're on the correct Chronicle?
I'm on HoustonChronicle.com. Okay.
I'm just checking.
It's Texas Sports. I pay money for this crap. Oh, wow. They're putting a San Francisco Chronicle.
You have
writer.
Every right to be angry.
I don't understand this. And this has happened before. They do it with San Francisco. They must have some kind of tit for tat. I don't know if John McClain's articles show up in the San Francisco Chronicle when they're both Gannett-owned papers or something. I don't need to see this crap.
Yeah.
I don't need to wake up the day after Christmas and see some San Francisco writer gloating in my hometown paper about
how they
won.
That would make me mad if I worked at the Chronicle, because that Texas Sports Nation is something that they push hard.
Yeah.
It's a subscription. Like you said, you subscribe to it. You pay for it. That would make me mad basically pissing off people who are paying for a subscription.
I've got a picture of Steph Curry. Look at Steph Curry. There's the headline picture on this article is Steph Curry in his stupid checkered pants gloating.
Yeah.
And did you hear about the leaked photos of Steph Curry? Was that true or not?
No, I think you were the one who told me about it.
You're the one that knows about this, Seth. Monday, and Steph Curry is trending, but it seemed like one of those things where it was trending because it was trending.
I got you.
Like one of those things.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Because it turned out, supposedly, there were leaked nude photos of Steph Curry. But everything that I saw or clicked on anything was people thirstily asking, where can I get them Steph Curry pics?
Well,
Where can I get them Steph Curry pics?
I just Googled, probably to my career detriment, Steph Curry nudes.
Yeah.
Nudes allegedly leaked online and Ayesha Curry had a field day. Oh, so I need to read this.
Yeah, but that doesn't even sound right.
No,
did she have a field day doing what?
I don't know. Maybe responding to it or something.
I
don't know.
The pictures weren't of her having the field day.
No. She was not. There's not even pictures in this thing. There's just a bunch of memes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So all I could tell was that it seemed like, I don't know if Steph Curry nudes actually leaked or not.
I don't either.
It was trending because people were seeking out these nudes more than anything.
Yeah.
That's good buzz.
That's good buzz for Steph Curry. You know, you get a little bit of buzz that there's nudes of you online, but they're not really there.
It seemed like positive. It seemed like the feedback was positive, I guess. I don't know.
if they'd actually leaked, they wouldn't be quite as positive.
I'll tell you a story. It's 7:08. I don't know. The kids aren't going to school today, but there was a rumor. Look, I was pure as the driven snow when I was at a certain age in high school.
Sure.
I was maybe a little bit of a late bloomer, actually. But there was a rumor going around that I was super promiscuous, that I'd been with all kinds of girls at school. I had a nickname, the 60 Minute Man. Well, I was a pure virgin. It was the weirdest thing ever, to the point where one of my friends, like a girlfriend, a friend that was a girl, told me that like this really hot girl wanted to go out with me, but she didn't just want to be another notch in my bedpost. And I was like, my bedpost is unblemished.
It's the cleanest bedpost in town.
So I have no idea how I got these rumors started about me in like incredibly positive press.
Yeah.
It was weird. I've never been so happy about an inaccurate rumor in my life was that I had this legendary reputation.
It's a little like, you ever seen the movie Can't Buy Me Love with Patrick Dempsey?
Yeah. I don't think that was Can't Buy Me Love. Wasn't that the Heartbreak Kid?
Well, no, the one I'm thinking of is Can't Buy Me Love, where he paid $1,000.
Oh, okay.
He's a nerd who paid $1,000 to this really hot actress named Amanda Peterson, who's no longer with us. It's the only movie she was ever in. It's a shame that she never, her star never took off. This was the apex of her career. But he was a nerd who paid her $1,000 to date him for like a week. And he said, I'll break up with you after a week and my reputation will be sealed. And it was. And he had a Seth Payne-like reputation after just dating her for 1 week. He didn't even hook up with her.
Because they figured there must be something
about
her.
There must be something there,
I was about to ask what happened with Amanda Peterson, but by some of the photos that she had a drug issue.
Didn't go well. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, God. Kids, stay off the damn drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy crap.
Because if it pulls up a picture of her from the movie, she's a cute little thing.
Yeah, but then you see the picture of her when, I'm guessing, meth or whatever.
Yeah, it's rough. She looks like Gary Busey.
Like,
yeah.
It's sad. Yeah. Like, worse than you.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, But Merry
Christmas, everybody.
Yes. Well, let's bring this back up. Let's raise this back up. So you had quite the reputation in high school, huh?
Yeah.
What
I
was
did.
The can you say the nickname on the air?
60 Minute Man.
You said 60 Minute Man.
Yeah.
Wow.
How
accurate
that's
was that?
Eventually.
How many minutes was it on the
line? Yeah, how many go rounds are we talking? I mean, yeah.
60 Minute Man.
I mean, any kid is at
course,
that age.
Yeah.
Because if anything,
I did it seven times in 1 hour. But
even that would probably sound intimidating to any prospective girls that I'm. Yeah.
So did you wind up just embracing it, or did you clarify for people that this is?
I didn't know what to do about it. I just I didn't clarify.
Yeah.
God no,
oh, yeah.
I just let that out there. But I did felt a little bit like a fraud. I felt like I felt like, you know, Steve Carell in 40-Year-Old Virgin, where he's like, oh yeah, when you touch breasts and they're all like sandy and everything, like a sack of sand. I felt like I had to have a certain level of expertise in talking about stuff that I clearly did not have.
You did not have
the other thing back then was we didn't have access to videos the way the,
I was just
the way
these say. Kids.
Like our level of knowledge was very rudimentary.
I was just you had no internet to be able to use as a reference point.
I had some
point.
Still photos that I might. I might be able to surmise
by Club Magazine and hope for the best.
It was really uncomfortable. I almost said, once I found out about that rumor, I was like, all right, I got to get to fixing this problem because so I can have some credibility.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, that's good. Those are good problems to fix.
Yeah.
So I put up a poll. Which was the more embarrassing loss, the Broncos losing or the Broncos beating the Texans or the Warriors beating the Rockets? Which do you think Houstonians feel more embarrassed about? At least 1,274 of them, Seth.
I would imagine the Texans game. Because
61%.
I mean, it's closer to the end of the season. You only get 16 games. Any NBA regular season game, even to the despised Warriors on Christmas Day, it's a whole lot easier to write off.
Yeah, 61-39.
Look, the Rockets did the same thing where they're defensive effort is sporadic, but a lot of this was simply coming down to guys missing open shots. I don't want to just simply write this off, but they did the things they were supposed to be doing when Harden is getting trapped. They're getting wide open shots. They just got to make those shots. Have some kind of dagger, you know, the ability to stick the dagger in somebody if they want to make it a 4-on-3 game.
You know what I don't ever need to see? When Harden gets trapped there, when he gets over half court, he gets trapped by two guys. And the dude who he's dumping the ball to there at the top of the key is Clint Capella, who then decides to turn and dribble, face the hoop and dribble like he's a three.
Yeah.
And go like
he's a
it's,
point .5, bro.
Oh, dude, Clint Capella creating his own offense? No, no bueno. That is not good. It's not good. It's not easy on the eyes. All right. There's one part of J.J. Watt's press conference in particular that resonated with Seth Payne. I will tell you what it is. Seth will tell you what it is next. Happy holidays, everybody. Hope you had a nice Christmas yesterday. Get everything you wanted. Did you get everything you wanted, Seth? Did you get good gifts?
Did you get
taken care of?
No, I got everything. I asked for meager things.
I do, too.
I like nice warm socks. That was my favorite gift that I got.
Yeah, I could see how much snow there was up there, dude.
Yeah.
I would want warm socks, too, where you were.
I was up with it was a good chunk of snow. It was fun. It felt very Christmassy.
Yeah.
It was really, I got into the carol, the Christmas songs and everything.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
My wife's family is really cool, actually, now that I think about it. I hear all these horror stories about people, you know, coming to blows over politics and everything. And everybody gets along pretty well.
Yeah,
you know,
it's the same thing with Amy's family.
Yeah.
Yeah. They like to drink at Christmas, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had several bottles of wine. They pulled out the green Sambuca.
Mm-hmm.
It's very spiritual. You know, it's green. It's Christmas time. So, yeah. You can only get it in one place in Italy, green Sambuca.
Really?
So we pull it out on special occasions, like the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I think Jesus would want us drinking green Sambuca on his birthday.
Do you know that you can buy houses in Sambuca right now for like a dollar? Italy's got all these people leaving rural sections of Italy,
really?
So all these different towns are offering up, you know, foreclosed homes and whatnot for a dollar.
That's
kind of like Detroit was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Except instead of Detroit, it's Italy. It's, let's see,
I've
got
like
a choice of buying a house for a dollar. Should I go to Sambuca, Italy, or Detroit?
Yeah.
I might try Italy.
So you buy a house for a dollar and closing costs are still like $4,000
I would imagine, and then you got to fix up the house. Yeah. And then you get the pleasure of, for just, you know, a few thousand dollars, probably, I'm guessing, being despised by the local villagers as an outsider.
Yeah,
for
you know what they say about real estate. God ain't making any more of it.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I almost feel like doing that as an investment.
I was flying yesterday. I'm looking over I guess we're probably flying over West Virginia. And I'm just like, just all these thousands and thousands and thousands of acres where there's just a few houses or so. And I want to own, is it too much that I just want to own like 5,000 acres out in the middle of nowhere and kind of act like it's my own country and just do whatever I want?
No.
Yeah, I really want to do that. And do as many things as I can get away with where the local cops can easily be bought off because there's only one of them.
Would you live off the land?
Or
would you build something?
No, I'd probably kill people and take their money and everything. I would do that thing. I would pretend I would get a fake police car.
Interesting thing to admit on the radio.
I would pull them over and then I would make them wire transfer money into my accounts and then I'd kill them and I'd bury them deep on my property and nobody would ever come looking for them.
This patch of land is basically, it's not a patch of land where you can feel like you have a portfolio built up. You actually want to create your own laws and run it as if you want to name it Painland.
Yes, I want to be like one of those hillbilly movies you see where it's terrifying, where if you do anything on my land, remember that really bad Chevy Chase movie where they go and Dan Aykroyd is in it, he plays like this judge that's in charge of this this place in rural New Jersey.
I know Deliverance.
Yeah, or Deliverance, same thing. without the sex part.
Right,
I don't
yeah.
think, I'm not a monster. No. I'm not going to defile these men before I kill them. I'm just going to take their money.
You're
going
to go Ned Beatty on all these guys, right. So J.J. Watt talked about his rehab for this pectoral injury on Tuesday at his press conference. Talked a lot about the mental part of the rehab.
I think the mental aspect is the biggest thing. It was where I'm a much different person mentally, obviously, now than when I came into the league. And so you learn from things and you grow from things, and you don't let it get you down. And I think that's played a huge part in this one, is that just the positive attitude, positive people around me, surrounding yourself with people who will lift you up in difficult times and who will also propel you towards the goals you want to achieve. And I think that I've had that the whole time. And then also talking to yourself, positive self-talk can make such a difference in your life. And I think that that's helped me a lot throughout these injuries, and this one especially, obviously. Just the belief that you can accomplish something really does make a difference, and you kind of manifest it into reality. And I think that's definitely helped me in this case.
I got really excited when I heard him mention the positive self-talk, because it's something that a lot of athletes do and a lot of self-help people would tell you to do it. And I think it's one of those things that you probably try from time to time. I don't know why I've gotten away from it since I've been done, but it is true. Like, you basically, the way it was sold to me was by Gary Moeller, the old University of Michigan coach.
Oh,
he was my defensive coordinator one year in Jacksonville.
Okay.
And then later by different sports psychologists. But basically the theory is your subconscious doesn't know whether it's you or somebody else speaking. And what it hears, it believes. So the more you tell yourself, like, hey, I'm going to come back from this thing. I'm going to have a good day. I'm going to have a great practice. I'm going to rebound from that. You giving yourself a pep talk, in a lot of ways, is just as impactful as somebody else giving you a pep talk.
As long as you're hearing the words from somebody.
And I remember walking across the bridge there from Kirby one day after practice when Endy Clue was first here. And I can't remember if it was Endy heard me talking to myself or I heard Endy talking to himself. But it was like, we started talking about that, because it's something you learn after 10. We were both in about our 10th year in the NFL. Mm-hmm. That you just learn to talk to yourself. Like, you talk to yourself between plays. You talk to yourself after bad plays. You talk to yourself before workouts. And it is super, super effective. And it's probably the thing that a lot of athletes do that seems like the weirdest thing to do in your own life. Like, you'd think somebody's a kook if you saw them talking to themselves all that much. But it just works.
Yeah.
So we need to start talking to ourselves more, Sean.
That sounds good.
We're going to have a good show, buddy.
Yeah,
we're going to be just fine. We're going to rebound from whatever the hell that last segment was.
I thought the segment was okay, but if you feel like we need to self-talk it through, do we do it in the same room with each other, or do we Do we do do I take that studio and you take this studio?
I want you to go into that studio and call me on the phone, and then we'll talk
to
each other.
And we're gonna have a tag team self talk.
We'll look at each other and talk to each other by the phone, but it'll feel more special because it's a phone call and nobody talks on the phone these days.
I am down.
I tried to get Mike to do when I was reading another one of these little self help dealios. It's to form trust between each other.
Yeah.
Here, do it right now. It's going to be very uncomfortable. You shake hands and you stare into each other's eyes for at least 10 seconds. There's like a physiological response where you form trust.
Yeah.
I tried to get Mike to do it every morning, and there we go. Okay. It lasted once.
That's good.
Yeah, we did it? We did it.
Are we going to do that every morning?
If we can bear it. Can we stomach it?
You know what I just learned? I don't like staring into the eyes of other men.
That's what I mean,
but if you feel like it'll make the show better,
it might make
it.
The show better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Shaking hands and staring into each other's eyes.
So everybody, the lesson from JJ.
How many days did Mike last doing it?
I don't think I ever got him to.
Zero.
I tried to mandate.
It does not feel like a Meltzer thing.
I didn't even say this one out loud. I was going to mandate hugging, that we hug before each show too, both me and Mike and Landry. And I can't think of a trio of people less wanting to hug each other. No, we all like each other very much, but we're not those guys.
No.
We're not the huggy guys.
No.
Yeah.
I like to hug. If you want to hug before the show, I'll hug before the show.
It's weird in a work environment. I'm frankly, in the last 2 years, I've decided I'd try. I'm about to say I never hug anybody at work anymore, except there's a little bit of a grandfather policy. Erin Kapner, I hug, and I, you know what, we'll have to ask her later if she's okay with it.
Okay.
But she's like my little sister. I feel like a certain, I love Erin Kapner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to stop hugging Erin Kapner.
Okay.
I think she's the only person I still hug in this office.
Okay.
I have a flat policy.
She's very hug-worthy.
All it takes is one woman being uncomfortable with me hugging her that I don't want to live with that. So,
not in this day and age.
Yeah, no, it's not even fear. It's like now I've read enough, since the Me Too started, I've read enough about women and how creeped out they are by some guys hugging them at work.
Yeah.
That I never want to be that guy.
Okay.
Plus, there's other, you know, some women have been through things where, like, any man hugging her is going to feel inappropriate. And, like, you don't know what's happening in a person's life.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I would hug Erin Kapner because she's the eyes and ears of the institution, and she's like the wolf in Pulp Fiction.
Well, but
she can fix things.
By the same
you.
Token, though, you wouldn't hug her if it was going to piss her off or if she was going to be uncomfortable.
That's true.
With it.
Yeah. So you're going to check with her
or
you're not going to
check
with her?
Laura and I hug, but Laura and I are like peers.
Laura Reynolds?
Yeah.
What about Ali?
Ali? Oh, yeah, but, well, Ali hugs me.
Yeah.
I get Me Too'd by Ali. She's got her hands all over me. Like everybody.
She's
touchy.
Very handsy.
She's very
yeah.
touchy-feely.
Yeah, but
yeah.
not in a uncomfortable
okay,
way.
Okay, so I hug Ali, too.
List is growing.
But they're all... Now, this Erin is a side hug, and Ali is a side hug.
Okay.
Laura and I give a full-on embrace.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Am I missing any other women?
I don't know. Probably. The list seems to be growing. I'm
turning into a hug whore very rapidly.
Yeah. The 60-minute man with the hugs.
Who haven't you hugged in this office?
That's right. So positive self-talk, kids. Positive self-talk will get you through
It'll get
the
you
tough
back
times.
From a pectoralis injury in 2 months or less.
It will. What do you think, if you had to gauge, just purely guessing, do you think we get full snap count, JJ, or you think we get specialist snap
count,
JJ?
That's a great question. You know what? My wife, actually, another woman that I hug.
Side hug or full-on hug?
She said this. She asked this question because we were talking about this earlier, and she asked if the fresh legs, because you said, hey, maybe he's got fresh legs because he's been out.
Yeah.
Does the rustiness and lack of game shape outweigh the fresh legs? That's where
Brandy with the counterpoint.
How
I like
many
it.
Snaps he gets? Yeah, she's arguing with me online. No hug for you tonight, Brandy. So, I think that it depends on how they use him. I would anticipate. This is what I would expect. This is what I'm guessing is that they bring him in on passing downs. Okay. He's going to come in on second and long and third and long, and they're going to try to reduce how many times he has to really punch on rundowns. When you're playing the run, you got to punch. You got to use that bench press. On passing downs, he still, like, JJ's not enough of a pure speed rusher to get away with not bull rushing. Mm-hmm. He needs to be able to bull rush and have the threat of a bull rush, but it's still different when you're getting ahead of steam and you can kind of, it's just not the same wear and tear. I'm guessing he comes in on passing downs, which would mean maybe 20 or 30 snaps at most in this game. So I think that, I think that's what we see out of him.
All right.
Maybe even less.
We'll do some headlines. An aging injured quarterback says he will be back and better than ever in 2020. Do we believe him? We'll talk about it next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
What is that pina colada song? I'm so it's one of the things that still makes me angry consistently.
How stupid that song is. Is it Rupert Holmes or Rupert Jones? One of them is a former outfielder for the Yankees. The other one sang that song.
Hold on. I just pulled up an article about Rupert Holmes.
Rupert Holmes.
He's the singer and the songwriter. He still lives a fine life in Westchester, New York.
Does he?
Because he still gets royalties from it. He wrote the song. I don't know how he wrote the song without ever having actually had a pina colada. And he said he didn't even know how to pronounce it correctly.
Really?
So I don't know if he didn't. Maybe he wrote the music and not the lyrics, whatever it might be. But for those of you who have never heard the song.
Sometimes ignorance is bliss.
It's about these two people that put ads out in the personals asking for somebody who likes pina coladas and getting caught in the rain. And then they get together and they're like, oh, hey, it's my old lady. And so it's this married couple that were trying to cheat on each other. And then they discovered, by the way, oh, we both like pina coladas, which we never knew. And apparently, getting caught in the rain, which no human being anywhere actually enjoys doing.
Oh, you haven't watched enough romantic comedies.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff happens in the rain.
And it's just a stupid song. But he's living a good life because of it. So God bless him.
I would love to know when it winds up in a commercial like that. Like, what type of
royalties he gets from that? That was a big, what commercial was that? That was an insurance company or something?
I'm not sure.
It was a national advertiser of some sort.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not bad. That's a good gig. So Ben Roethlisberger, contrary to recent reports, he tweets. Ben Roethlisberger, of course, the injured Pittsburgh Steeler quarterback. Contrary to recent reports out there about my football future and my, quote, uncertainty about playing again, I am working hard and I'm more determined than ever to come back stronger and better than ever next year. Now, I saw this tweet embedded into an article, Seth. I was not able to click on it and read it myself because, as I learned yesterday, I have been blocked by Ben Roethlisberger on Twitter.
That's a phenomenon. Had you been aware of that phenomenon?
No.
Apparently, a lot of people are blocked by Ben Roethlisberger.
Okay.
Including people that claim they've never even tweeted about Ben Roethlisberger.
I'm one of those people.
Right. To the point where Ben Roethlisberger has blocked so many people on Twitter that I can't imagine it's actually him doing the blocking.
Okay.
There's no way. I can't imagine Ben Roethlisberger spends a whole lot of time on Twitter to begin. He just doesn't strike you as the type, does he? He's out hunting or snowmobiling or something like that. He's not spending time on Twitter.
Yeah, eating cheesesteaks.
I think his publicist or somebody must go through and just kind of blanket block people somehow.
That's bad. That's a bad look.
He might do it, or whoever does it for him might do it whenever anybody says anything negative about the Steelers, like, because they want to just try to cleanse. If I'm Ben Roethlisberger, I'm sitting up there with my, you know, $100 million or so, because I've gotten kind of eccentric now, because I'm Ben Roethlisberger.
Yep.
I've been the king of Pittsburgh for 2 decades.
I've got all the money in the world.
I've cheated death by getting in a crash without a helmet on a motorcycle.
Yeah, yeah.
You might have cheated
getting thrown into jail at one point or another with the whole Milledgeville thing.
I've won a Super Bowl with the assistance of the officials and fate in Seattle. So, like, yeah, he feels like he can do pretty much whatever he wants.
Yeah. So he's saying he's going to come back stronger and better than ever next year. Ben Roethlisberger, he's a Hall of Famer, obviously. He's a really, really good quarterback when he's healthy. I don't know, man. He's one of those guys that when Ben Roethlisberger goes out with an injury, if you ask me which way things could go, is he grinding to stay in shape or get into better shape, or is he growing a beer belly?
Yeah.
Beer belly's like -150.
This is what I'm torn with, because I got into a debate with somebody about this the other day. Roethlisberger had one of those years last year where I wanted to start gloating about it, and then all of a sudden by the end of the year I realized, oh, he does have 5,129 yards passing. Yeah. It is still a big deal to pass over 5,000 yards. Statistically, he had one of his better seasons last year. His completion percentage is as high as it's ever been, and I think this year there were a lot of people after game one saying, wow, Roethlisberger might have lost it. But then at the same time, those same people are saying a few weeks later, wow, the Patriots, the team that beat Roethlisberger in week one, might be one of the best defenses ever.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like, is it because the Patriots, and that was during that stretch when the Patriots hadn't really played anybody good. And I feel like people were kind of like simultaneously with saying, well, the Patriots are one of the best defenses ever, but also Roethlisberger sucks now because he had a bad game versus the Patriots.
That's a good point.
Without Antonio Brown for the first game before they've had time to adjust everything.
Yeah, I think we should point out they missed the playoffs last year, which I think probably you know, sort of skews things in terms of how people perceive Ben Roethlisberger to have been. That's the one position that gets judged by how the team does.
It was a really weird year for the Steelers last year.
Last year was very strange, yeah. So they missed the playoffs last year. So that probably has a lot to do with the opinion on that season that he had. This is an interesting phase that we're coming up to, Seth, I think, with some of these older quarterbacks that have just been around forever and have played at the same level for a really long time. I'm talking about guys drafted between, we'll say, like 2000, 2001, because that's Tom Brady and Drew Brees are in that realm. Through like 2000, I'll take it all the way up to like 2008 when Matt Ryan got drafted. These are guys, if you look at the guys drafted inside of that window, that chronological window, Brees, Brady, a couple years after that in 2004, Eli, Big Ben, Philip Rivers, Aaron Rodgers the next year in 2005, Matt Ryan in 2008. These guys who are in the early part of their 30s, heading towards the mid part of their 30s, in the case of Brees and Brady in their 40s, we're starting to get to the point now where some of these guys are going to get, I think, they're on, you know, truly they're on the 18th fairway. You know what I mean? Like Philip Rivers, the Chargers should be looking at quarterbacks in the draft coming up. The Steelers should be looking at quarterbacks in the draft coming up. I think the Saints, with Drew, as well as Drew Brees has played, I think you got to start looking at the contingency plan with Drew Brees. You know, the Giants have already done that with Eli and Daniel Jones.
Do you think old Gardner Minshew might be sent out to the pastures this year too?
Who?
Gardner Minshew. I'm joking because Minshew is.
I know.
Yeah. It was a few weeks ago that we were thinking like, hey, Minshew might be the guy in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about all the teams that actually have to.
Look at quarterbacks. Yeah. No, for sure. I think it's fair to ask Jacksonville with Foles there. They spent all that money on him. So when I look at this Roethlisberger thing, I just start to think about some of these older guys and some of these teams that might be looking at quarterbacks that we don't have on the radar for looking at quarterbacks.
Right. And then the other interesting question comes, all right, well, none of those teams are going to get rid of – Eli's not going to go anywhere, right? I mean, he's done.
Yeah, he's done.
I'm saying he's not going to. Yeah, he's not going to try to.
He's
going to
retire.
Is he? He knows better.
The favorite Peyton's is gonna, he retires.
Yeah, I think even if Eli were dumb enough to like try to go somewhere.
Yeah.
What about you? Didn't mention Tom Brady, did you?
Just in passing, just as the, you know, sort of the oldest of all those.
Yeah, so. but in terms of him leaving,
I didn't mention.
I mean, there is that chance. He's a free agent, and he's taken a pay cut. Like effectively for the last decade.
Do you think
he'd
play somewhere else?
I don't know. When I listen to people up there talk about what's going on, it's almost like an uncomfortable. It feels a little bit like the taking the keys away from grandpa type of moment where they don't quite know how to feel about it. And they don't, but they also know that it's not as simple as, well, he's not performing like he used to. So you're just going to replace him with a younger guy. Or
they don't really have him surrounded with anything right now.
No. I mean? I don't know. Like, you're going to throw somebody else in there with that crew of wide receivers and expect to get something out
right,
of it.
Right. So I don't know. The free agency thing is interesting because I just can't envision Brady playing somewhere else. Like, you start to look at teams. First of all, there aren't that many teams that are looking hardcore at quarterbacks right now for next year. I only count the only teams that I count as fully like invested in replacing quarterbacks in the draft coming up this year are Cincinnati and Miami. After that, I think you can name any other NFL team, and they're rolling with something at quarterback that they're either, you know, really happily married to, or they're in one of those forced marriages because they're staying together for the kids, kind of thing. Or they have an aging quarterback where you just don't know if they're looking at that position. I think Cincinnati and Miami are the only two that I can come up with where I go, those two teams are definitely going to be drafting a quarterback in the first round.
And what do you do with Detroit if you've got Matt Stafford and you've got a coach that you just flat out are sticking with? I guess just because you don't think I don't know what Patricia's done to show that, either like on a defensive coordinator side or as a head coach or anything, he must be doing something special behind the scenes there that we just don't know about, because there's certainly enough former, like Glover Quinn came out and kind of torched him, and Glover Quinn's not the kind of guy that torches people.
Yeah,
I feel like when Glover Quinn torches you gotta really have done something messed up. Like, for a guy that probably didn't have any ill will, I don't think Glover Quinn would have felt like, oh, I got screwed over by the Lions or something. He's at that age. He's not trying to play anywhere else. He's retired. He just came out and been honest and said that Patricia did the classic thing where he was trying to be Bill Belichick. He tried to be a grumpy SOB, and that might not even be his actual personality, but he thinks that's the way he's got to act.
God, how futile does it feel if you're Matt Stafford, knowing that Matt Patricia's coming back for another year, like, God. I'm 33 or whatever he is, 32 years old. Another year wasted. Matt Patricia, awesome.
Are you moving on from Matt Ryan?
No, I don't think Atlanta, but I think he's at the I mean, almost like younger Matt, like, end of the spectrum of teams that start to look at, okay, what are the next few years look at?
I shouldn't say move on. Like, Matt Ryan's going to be the quarterback next year, but you're making your contingency plans already. I feel like Matt Ryan could be that guy almost kind of like Rivers was, where you feel like he's starting to hit his decline, and then all of a sudden he has another 5 good years in him.
Yeah, maybe. I think he's at the very young end of the spectrum of teams that start to have to at least think about it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a spot where they're going to wind up being 6-10 this year, Atlanta. That's a spot where you can start thinking about quarterback if the right one falls there. I think Tua is a huge wild card in all this. Tua and his hip and how much that affects teams near the top of the draft, maybe wanting to stay away from him. What's the breaking point for a team where they go, you know, what's the breaking point in the first round where a team goes, you know what, we're not in the market for a quarterback right now, but this guy's so good when he's healthy that we'll take the chance that he's going to be fully healthy again with his hip.
And then you avoided the immediate discomfort of having your starting quarterback be like a Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers type deal.
Yeah.
Where I don't think of those guys, well, they're going to look at Tua as a threat, whoever that guy is, whoever the starter is. And then it's the question in the fan base's mind immediately becomes, well, when is Tua going to be ready? You're just pushing off the inevitable, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, speaking of the Tua, you know, tanking for Tua, remember that? I said this, how bad the Dolphins messed up by signing Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't know why you would do that. You're where you're trying to tank. You drafted
four
a guy.
Games.
He's going to go off at least 4 games, you know? Maybe they win this week. 5 games. That's what Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's going to give you some miserable performances, but he's going to give you some brilliant performances too.
Yeah,
he's so much fun to watch.
You called that.
If you're going to try to, it was the dumbest thing they did this year if they were going to try to tank.
Let's do some headlines. A reminder here, stay tuned because at the end of this, you're going to have a chance to win some Texans tickets. It's a Texans ticket Thursday. Your chance to win a pair of tickets to the game on Sunday is going to be coming up in this segment. Let's do headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
The Rockets lose on Christmas Day in San Francisco to the Golden State Warriors. It's an 82-game season. This is no reason to go insane over the actual outcome of this basketball game, Seth, other than the fact that this is a Rockets team that on a single road trip has proven that they can beat a team that's in the conversation to be the very best in basketball, the Clippers, and then lose to a team that's been, for the most part, the very worst team in basketball this year, the Warriors.
The window
for this Rockets team is very large.
So far, the story of the Rockets and the Texans seasons have been inconsistency.
Wild inconsistency.
They both suffer from the same inconsistency.
Yes.
And with the Rockets, in this game, look, the Warriors did the double James Harden strategy that teams have been experimenting with. And it really shouldn't have worked. The Rockets had plenty of open shots.
Right.
They just decided to go cold. Russell Westbrook can't be taken 8. He went 0-for-8 from 3-point. Predictably. Just because he had this little stretch where he was shooting 45% from 3 or whatever. That was bad news. You knew that wasn't going to end well. He's going to get too damn confident. That'll be fine. This is just a stupid loss on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Thanks for the coal in my stocking, Rockets. But I still love you.
Thanks for ruining my parlay. Lamar Jackson. Seth, is it just understood that quarterbacks buy their offensive linemen really, really nice gifts? Like, do all quarterbacks do that?
Some of them do. You know what? There was a
Lamar Jackson bought Rolexes for all of his offensive linemen.
I want to tell you something. You know what? I accidentally deleted all my texts a little while back. Chester Pitts told me about one of the worst gifts he'd ever received from an offensive lineman or from a quarterback, and I don't think I still have it on here. No, I don't.
What was it?
It wasn't good. It was not a Rolex. It was some quarterbacks don't get all that.
Jelly of the month.
But it was also sometimes if you've been sacked 70 times, maybe you're not feeling all that charitable at Christmas time.
Hey, Austin, what are you? How long are you letting these things go before you're playing the buzzer? Oh, no. We go longer than a minute on these. Yeah. Take it a good 90 seconds. I'm like, wow, we barely even gotten into Lamar Jackson here. Probably the most famous gift that that I remember Texan-wise was Arian Foster with the segues for the offensive linemen.
Oh, he got segues for all of them.
Yeah.
And then O'Brien came in and banned them.
Yes. Now you got a bunch of offensive linemen riding around their neighborhoods on segues because they're not allowed in the building.
I got nervous with it. Because the thing is, with the offensive linemen, I always just think about this myself back when I was in my playing weight. You know, most things aren't engineered for offense. It's not just the body weight. It's the complete total mass and like how it's proportioned and everything.
Yeah,
I just don't think that they're designed for 40-pound guys who aren't just. I just get nervous about stuff like that. Yeah. I used to get really nervous because those things zip around. So I was kind of glad to see the Segway ban go into effect.
You were,
yeah, because okay. The same thing happens to me at and big guys at water parks. Because
yeah.
I feel like it's one thing if you're just a big tubby fella.
Water parks.
If you're really dense though, I feel like you cut through the water in such a way that like I go up on the berms to where I feel like I'm falling out of them almost. I've injured myself seriously at water parks before just by just gaining too much speed, too much velocity. I'm like
it's physics.
I'm a big hunk of metal sliding down that
it's
thing.
Just physics.
Yeah.
Last headline here: in the NBA, the Clippers beat the Lakers yesterday. Lakers have hit a little bit of a rough patch here. Recently, LeBron James tweaked a groin during that game as well. Patrick Beverley was coming in with all sorts of limbs flailing and whatnot,
yeah,
and hit LeBron right in the neighborhood.
Yeah, really,
down there.
Really hate to see it. You know, team of destiny and whatnot. But I would imagine now that this is getting back to be like an old LeBron team, whatever last year's was where he punted on the season.
Yeah,
it's not that. Then you kind of have to go back to the Cavs rules, I think, and say, oh well. See what happens in the postseason.
Yeah.
Remember, because the Cavs used to break the rule, too, used to be you had to be a top 10 defense to really have a shot at the title.
Right.
Cavs would just decide not to play defense until the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then they do it.
Yep.
So this is a better Lakers team for the most part. It's just hit a rough stretch. Did you notice the camera angle in that game?
Yes.
They've got this camera that follows along.
Yeah, these.
I don't know. It's a little disorienting to me.
Yeah, it's the. These TV these networks with these camera angles that try to get so cute during, they do it during football games, they do it during basketball games. For some reason, like they do it in the
punt on football games.
Yes.
And it always from behind. So then whenever something interesting actually happens, you can't tell what's going on.
Right. And the worst was I think it was the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago, CBS or Turner, whichever, they both carry the games. They had this camera angle that was literally as if you were laying on the floor at about half court. Like, literally, the camera is at the level of people's feet. And I'm like, nobody wants to watch the game. Just give us the normal angle.
And they were doing that not just for replays. They were doing that for the actual live action.
During the game, like, people, guys bringing the ball up the court. I'm like, nobody wants this angle. Nobody wants to watch something, a bird's eye view looking down at the rim. Like,
I don't like having the camera move
while
the game. It's disorienting.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not meant to behave that. I don't think that's an old man thing either. I think it's just like a human thing.
No, it's a human thing.
Yeah, the camera behind the punter drives me absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Because whenever they run a fake or anything, you really can't tell what's going on.
Right.
And it's the only time you actually really want to watch the punt is when that's happening.
Yep. All right, John McClain is going to...
swore again.
John McClain is going to come in and join us in the 8 o'clock hour. Normally on a Wednesday, but yesterday was Christmas, so he's going to join us here on a Thursday. We'll get his thoughts on the return of J.J. Watt, Titans and Texans. How did the Texans play this thing for week 17 and a whole lot more. And right now, let's give away some tickets to the Texans and the Titans. All right, so John McClain jumping in with us next, 832-430-2WIN. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.